It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 38th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I had a chance to participate in a phone conference call with Steve Niles, whose Remains comic miniseries is coming to the Chiller Network this Friday as a live-action film. He gets to talk about comics, about translating them into movies, and a lot of other good things during the interview, so I'm sure you'll enjoy that. Then I review this week's comics, and we wrap up things with news and previews with Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glazer. So let's get to it.
They had hoped it would save the world.
They have finally reached Peace Day.
But when the dust settles...
So much for Peace Day.
They could only hope...
This is bad. You don't know the half of it.
...to save themselves. From the creator of 30 Days of Night.
They're stronger and faster than the ones we've seen before.
After the end of everything.
What is wrong with you?
Find out why. Remains. The world premiere of Steve Niles Remains. December 16th at 10 p.m. Only on Chiller. Scary good.
Hi, today I'm talking with Steve Niles, a horror writer who has created many successful comics, including Remains, which is being turned into a movie for the Chiller Network. How are you doing today, Steve?
All right.
How involved were you in the making of the film?
You know, very close to it. Basically, you know, I guess the best way to call my role was I supervised a lot. They ran the script by me, and I did set visits, and I was in constant contact with the folks at Chiller and Synthetic, and they kept me involved at every stage of approving makeup and, like I said, the script. But part of it was these guys really knew what they were doing, and I felt perfectly comfortable being on the other coast while they were working on it. But they kept me involved quite a bit, and I really appreciate that.
As an author, what do you look for when you're approached by someone who wants to turn a graphic novel that you've done into a movie or a series?
Honestly, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm for the material means more to me than a big option. The bidding war for 30 Days of Night is the perfect example. I really didn't care. There were three studios bidding. They all had a lot of money, but I went with the one that had Sam Raimi. Sam knows horror. And that was very similar with the guys from Remains. Andrew reached out to me from Synthetic Cinema, and he was very upfront about it. We're a small company. We've just done these things, but we really love this material. And he understood Remains, too, which is really important to me. Because a lot of times what happens in Hollywood is people will come to you and say, "Oh, my God, I love your book. Let me tell you our take on it." It's like, but the book is the take. That didn't happen with Chiller and with Synthetic Cinema. They wanted to do the comic book. They wanted to capture the spirit of it, and that's shockingly rare. So their enthusiasm is what really got my attention.
I want to ask you about zombies and why you think they're so popular right now.
I think horror always reflects our general fears and anxieties in society. And right now, without getting too serious, right now we're actually afraid of other people. We're afraid of disease. We're afraid of being invaded by people who look kind of like us. So the way we sort of express those fears are through, what better than this mindless zombie horde that wants to eat us? Our neighbors. I mean, they are. They're our friends and neighbors who want to kill us and eat us. I think zombies are a very, very basic way for us to confront those fears too, because the reality of it, you know, the real world stuff is so horrifying, and zombies are a great way for us to sort of work through those fears. And that's just something I feel about horror in general. I always feel like it's a release, and we use it to, like I said, to illustrate what we're afraid of and then shoot it in the head.
I was curious to find out about Paradise Lost. Where are you on that project right now?
I'm writing a script that I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to go into protective when the artist reads it. Because if you've ever read Paradise Lost, once the war starts, everything is in the millions. So for the first time in my life, I'm writing a comic book, and I'm literally going like, I am so sorry, but a million angels come swirling down. I'm really having a lot of fun with it. I'm working from Alex Proyas' script, so you know, not the poem. If I was working from the poem, I would not sound nearly as chipper. Alex Proyas wrote this incredible script, and that's what I'm adapting. And he really figured out a way to strip it down to the basic story, where you're dealing with basically the story of Lucifer and his relationship to the archangels and how the whole division started. And I'm really having fun. And then Michael Kaluta is doing the art.
How does it feel to have the first original movie on the Chiller Network?
This is really exciting for me because I really like TV movies. I grew up with TV movies. I don't even know if this name will mean anything to anybody on this call, but Dan Curtis, the hero of mine, he did the show, the Night Stalker shows and Dark Shadows. And I mean, he was behind so much of these great things, and he used to do all these great TV movies. And also used to be Richard Matheson used to write tons of ABC movies of the week during the 70s, and they're these really wonderful, pretty much exactly this kind of stuff. They were Richard Matheson's short stories turned into movies for TV. So I just have this a really special affection. And I remember when they called, I could tell they were everybody sort of like apologetic. Do you want to do a TV movie? And I'm thrilled with it, because Night Stalker being one of my favorite TV movies of all time. So I remember when I got together with these guys, I started talking to them about these TV movies and, sort of got them in the spirit of it. So I'm thrilled. And then Chiller has wound up being just, they're already like my family. They've been so great and keeping me informed. Shane and Tom and everybody has just welcomed me into the Chiller family, and it's just been wonderful. And I cannot say enough about the promotion on this. It's hard for me to even watch Chiller right now because I get sick of seeing my name all over the place. So I'm really excited, and I'm excited about the movie too, because I think it really came out fun.
I wanted to know, which ones do you like better, vampires or zombies?
That's a tough one. I have to go with vampires, and let me qualify that. My kind of vampires, nasty vampires that don't want to seduce you, they want to take your blood. I've been writing them for a long time. I've developed an affection for them. And as a writer, there's slightly more you can do with that particular monster. Zombie stories are great for telling stories about humans, oddly enough, while vampires are great for telling stories about vampires. They are technically still human and have brains and lives and emotions and things like that you can play with. So I'd have to go with vampires.
For those people who haven't read the Remains graphic novels, what separates the Remains zombies from anything else that we've read about?
Well, really, I mean, that's a big thing I wanted to bring up, I want to talk about too, because I know a lot of people right now, Walking Dead is so popular, and that's sort of the current version of what people think zombies are. When I sat down to write Remains, it was a time when Walking Dead was just starting to get strong as a comic, Land of the Dead was out, there was a zombie surge building. When I sat down to do Remains, I wanted to do something different. And I wanted to do something that was a little bit bigger than the do they run or do they shamble. And for that, it seemed like I had to come up with something that could put the audience and the characters on edge. Because let's face it, now especially, everybody knows how to deal with zombies. So you board up in the house and you wait it out. You shoot them as they come to you. But in Remains, that doesn't necessarily work. Because of the event that creates these zombies, there's actually two different kinds. And one of them is a slightly more advanced, and they're eating the others and they're evolving. In Remains, you can never sit back in your boarded up house and be comfortable, because the zombies will sooner or later figure out how to either climb in or pull the boards off. So I had a lot of fun with that. I had a lot of fun playing with zombie conventions, because there's not just the Walking Dead zombies. There's the George Romero zombies, the Fulci zombies. There's the Return of the Living Dead zombies. There's the remake of the Dawn of the Dead zombies. And I really tried to have fun with all of them, because that's another thing, and it's just a pet peeve of mine with any genre movie, is it bugs me when anything is all the same. The Star Trek planet where everybody has blonde bowl cuts. I'm like, how did that happen? I figure in a world where zombies are created, especially in Remains, it's because of a human accident, that there would be variations of the disease of the based on the proximity to what happened.
You mentioned on Twitter that someone had approached you about doing a stage production of one of your properties. Which one was that?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I can't say which property yet because I haven't actually met with them. We want to make sure it's possible. But what I can say is it's going to be one of mine and Bernie Wrightson. Essentially, what we're going to try to do is do a live Bernie Wrightson comic. And Bernie wants to paint the sets. I'm going to have a problem now with the backdrops are going to be original Bernie Wrightson art. They're going to be more valuable than anything. So what we're going to try to do is do a live comic on stage.
I wanted to find out what you thought were the biggest production challenges in bringing remains from a comic book into in front of the camera and onto the small screen. What was the most difficult part of that process?
Well, the biggest thing is, I run into this a lot with comic books to movies. In a comic book, you have no budget. I can do anything I want. If I want 10,000 bikers coming out of the horizon, I can do that. The artist will be mad at me, but it's not a budget issue. So the first thing we had to do was go through the comic, and there were a few set pieces that would have just been impossible. And if people read the comic, there is a biker scene in there that it just would have cost too much money because it literally is hundreds and hundreds of bikers approaching through the desert, not realizing that they're about to hit an entire system of wires. So they all get sliced like like deli sandwiches as they ride into the city. The budget to shoot that was just way over the top, so we had to come up with other ways to do it. I'm really happy with synthetic cinema because the budget is a TV movie budget. I am absolutely shocked at how much of the comic that they actually got on film. They did such a good job of figuring out a way around. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a scene involving a circus prop from a sort of a Cirque du Soleil type casino. I assume that would just be cut because it's so over the top and so silly. And they found a way to do it. And not only did they found a way to do it so that it's really effective. So I've been really happy with this. I've always been a fan of low-budget horror. As a matter of fact, I think in the history of horror, most of our best films started with kids with not much money trying to figure out a way to make the best movie possible. And I will point to the greatest zombie movie of all time, which is Night of the Living Dead. It was shot for, what, $70,000 on the weekend? Well, they were making industrial movies at the time. So I think I think Synthetic, Andrew, and all the guys at Synthetic really did just a fantastic job because, like I said, except for that the biker horde, we got everything in there.
I understand you visited the site during production. Was there any scene that really stuck out for you when you were there without revealing too much?
Yeah, I was so impressed. You know, I visited the set with Ted Adams, who is the publisher at IDW. We've been on other sets, Hollywood sets. And one of the things we noticed is when you're on a Hollywood set, it's like, boy, they spent about 9 hours shooting about 15 seconds. It can get really tedious. These guys, man, they moved in like a strike team. They came in and had this hotel. They had the scenes set up in the various rooms they were going to go to, and we watched them go room to room. I mean, and it wasn't Ed Wood, you know, reckless. It was they knew what they wanted. They had everything set up and spread out so they didn't have to break everything down and reset up. So we watched them just go scene to scene to scene. It was incredible. I mean, you know, they just moved around and everybody, and it was really great watching the cast because Grant, who plays Tom, Grant Bowler, was on set getting the zombies riled up. And there's a scene where without giving a plot away, there's a scene with an electronic door. And they shot it. I guess they did about 8 or 9 takes while I was there. And everyone got better because all the actors and the director all came together and would go like, okay, this is what we're doing, and this is great. And it was a real group effort. There was nobody standing around, looking bored, doing it. Everybody was involved. And I hope that spirit of fun comes through because it was just great. And so there's a scene with a sliding door. That's all, you know, I don't want to give anything away that I watched them shoot. And it was really fun seeing how they did it.
Steve, during your career, you've had a wonderful knack for figuring out or anticipating what the next wave in genre fandom is going to be. So you did like vampires and then went into 30 Days and then with Zombies with Remains. And even now you're working on a Frankenstein book with the character becoming very popular. Do you have anything you use as a guideline, or is this something you just do because you want to do it?
I was just going to say, I'm just a fan of this stuff. Everything I've ever done, 30 Days came out of, I just wanted to do something. I didn't get paid. You know, that I did, when we did that comic, it was for free. So Ben and I had an opportunity to do a different kind of vampire. So I did that. I'm a huge, huge horror fan. I don't think there's especially with the classics, I don't think there's anything I haven't seen 10 times. So I have that thing in me where I want to do my versions. But nothing in me wants me to, I have a complete aversion to just doing what somebody else did before. So I always want to try to come up with some sort of fresh new take. But that's coming, it really is coming out of the spirit of fun. I know for a horror writer, I use the word fun a lot. But that's really what it comes from. The Frankenstein book is, I read I carried Bernie's Frankenstein book around the first one when I was a kid. And now I've grown up and I'm working with him on the sequel. I'm the luckiest kid, monster kid on earth. It's just enthusiasm because I genuinely love this stuff and I would be doing it whether they were being made into movies or comics. I'd be doing it anyway. And that's what I did my whole life. I have this reputation of being very prolific, when in fact I've just been writing my whole life, and I just have a lot of material piled up. I've never felt like I'm predicting anything or I'm ahead of any curve. That's a dangerous road to go down, trying to predict trends. So I just do what I like. I just do what I love, and I happen to love Frankenstein, vampires, and zombies.
What about Cal McDonald? Do you think that he might end up on the small or on the big screen? Perhaps another Chiller movie could be done with him.
Well, he is spoken for. Right now, Cal is being developed at Universal Studios for a feature movie. And after being through multiple studios, Universal really gets it. And they're letting us do it as an R, because for years people wanted me to do it as a PG-13 movie. And I was like, have you read the comic? There's really not a lot of PG-13 stuff to Cal. But as a matter of fact, I had breakfast with Mike Richardson from Dark Horse yesterday, and we discussed it. And we will hopefully have some really good news in, I'd say, the next 6 months or so. But I'm continuing with the comics. As a matter of fact, I turned in the latest installment of Criminal Macabre yesterday. And so we're keeping the comics going. We're going to bring the novels. We're going to reprint those and keep all that going. But yes, something will happen with Cal McDonald. And if it doesn't pan out as a horror movie, I agree with you that I think it would be a wonderful series, especially just because, there's 20 years of material. I've been writing him for 20 years now. So we could have many seasons if we got it on TV.
Because most zombie movies are post-apocalyptic, we never find out how this stuff happened. And yet Remains, you specifically show what took place to cause the zombies to be created. Why was that?
I hate to give a really simple answer, but in the comic, I did it because it was funny. I really wanted to go for the absurdity of the situation that here we are finally figuring out that we're going to disarm and it's peace day and something goes wrong and peace day winds up being the end of days. So it really was, I was going for something and I was trying to do something a little different because most zombie movies don't explain it. So I wanted to try to explain it, and I needed to, because I knew that I was going to try to do this thing with different varying degrees of zombies, that there are different ones depending on who was closer to the event, what happens, what kind of zombie you turn into. So that came out of just trying to do something different.
Steve, thanks for talking with me, and I hope Remains is a big success on Cheller.
Oh, thank you. Good to talk to you, man.
Remains airs on Chiller on Friday, December 16th at 10 o'clock.
together from the cosmic reaches of the universe. Here in this great hall of justice are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Now let's have a look at the books that came out this past week. The two books that really stuck out to me were Animal Man number 4 and Swamp Thing number 4. And as I wrote in my column, DC Comics and Beyond, on SciFiPulse.net, there's some real interesting similarities and differences between the comics. One of the things that I hope will be explained is the fact that both of the leading characters, I use that in quotes, are blonde Caucasian males. I'd be really curious to see if there was some sort of relationship between the two, because that's kind of an unusual thing in comics these days. But if you're not reading Animal Man number 4 and Swamp Thing number 4, I really recommend them. What's interesting is that they seem to have been a crossover ever since they first got started, and you have to read the books to find that out, or read my column. But they're really great books, so I highly recommend them. Other new 52 books that came out this week with Detective Comics, which is just really soaring. It's giving Batman a run for its money. Then comes Action Comics, which reimagines Steel as a hero. Then I liked Batwing, which continues to take the hard way on every circumstance. I like that about that book. A big surprise to me continues to be Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, number 3 of 6. What a great book that is. Spooky and creepy and interesting all at the same time. I hope this creative team gets to do more with Batman in the future. Another Batman family member, Huntress number 3 of 6, continues to be a fun adventure comic. Speaking of the Dark Knight, he and Guy Gardner play important roles in Justice League International number 4. On the other hand, I find Red Lanterns really different because it's the Green Lantern Corps, but sort of on its head. I really like that about it. Hawk and Dove has Dead Man guest starring, and something interesting happens to him in the book. Stormwatch has Paul Cornell writing it, who's apparently going to leave the book, I'm sorry to hear. Green Arrow continues to be another heroic comic that I like. I enjoy Men of War, which is also going to undergo a writing change. Static Shock continues to improve this month, and I enjoyed the Kirby-esque artwork on OMAC as well. Other books that are worth getting are Supernatural number 3 of 6 from DC, the excellent Balaam the Outcast number 1, Irredeemable number 32, and Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes number 2 from Boom. Defenders number 1 was interesting from Marvel, and another great book was Moriarty number 7 from Image. And those are the books that came out this week.
If you're looking for serious science fiction, well, we can't really help you. But if you're looking for science fiction with fun, join us at sfp-now.com.
If you absolutely insist on using erotic persuasion to achieve your devious ends, then so be it.
It's time for this week's news and previews, and with me as always is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm very good, actually. I'm a little bit drunk.
Okay, so you're in good shape then. And Gianluca Glazer, how are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing fine. I'm not drunk, unfortunately.
Yeah, me either. Ian's going to have to do that for both of us, I guess, is cover that. The thing I wanted to start off with was an email I sent around to both you guys. The numbers for November have come out, and DC is on top again for the third month in a row. We've got to be careful if we get used to that. And there were several things they listed, the top 10 included Justice League was number 1 and some other stuff. Gianluca, why don't you start off by commenting on that? Anything in the numbers that stood out to you?
Interesting enough, yeah, DC was number 1 third month in a row, but the difference wasn't that great. In terms of sales numbers, DC was ahead by just a little over 1%. And in terms of unit sales, again, it was kind of like a 1% kind of difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Marvel is kind of creeping back up. They may be number 1 next month.
Well, I wanted to point out a couple of things. I did some reading on some people discussing these numbers. The one thing that they pointed out was that the 0.1
issue that was number 5. The orders were doubled on that by Marvel. So the $5.99 book, that probably influenced the numbers as well as the cost because they did that. Now, the question is, you know, is that included in the numbers? We don't know that quite at this point. But some people were saying that actually Marvel was a little farther behind because of that. Somebody else also noticed that The Flash is in the top 10. It's number 9. You know, and The Flash does really well when he has odd art on there. When Geoff Johns was writing The Flash a while back and they had a different artist on there, The Flash did very well. And that's the case now where we have, and of course, Johns isn't writing it, but they've got a new artist on there and he's doing a pretty good job with it. And The Flash is way up there. So anyway, Ian, did you have any comments you wanted to make on this?
It's not really surprising that Marvel are catching now because it's been, 3 months now?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the excitement's probably dying down a little bit. A lot of the ones that maybe are not selling as well as Detective and Action, people are probably leaving those titles now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be some drop-off. And also, Marvel's got an event coming up next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I should imagine, I hate to say this, Wayne, but I should imagine Marvel probably be back at the top next month.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because it's a different thing between number 3s and number 1s. A lot of the number 3s came out in November as opposed to number 1s. And, of course, number 1s are going to always sell much better than others. Now, the event that Ian's referring to is Avengers versus X-Men.
Yes.
Which will be a 12-month-long thing. It's actually not a year-long thing because it's actually going to start in March or thereabouts. But it'll go for 12 issues, and that's 12 months in a row. So they're definitely looking to up that. And, of course, you know, Avengers and X-Men, with the Avengers movie coming out, that really ought to sell real well. So we'll see how that goes next year. My hope is that when the dust settles, and we probably have a few more months before that really happens, we get to where the status quo is. My hope is that DC will at least be competitive with Marvel, that the two of them will be neck and neck if DC's not ahead. So that'll make this a whole new 52 thing worthwhile if DC has actually made some sort of gains on a regular basis with it. But, you know, time will tell. We don't know that right now.
You want to hear a little bit of stats on the November sales?
Okay.
All right. Some things that were surprising. I saw that IDW was ranked ahead of Dark Horse in terms of units sold.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Versus comics last month, periodicals were down 4.57% in terms of dollars and down 7% in terms of units. But they were up 23.10% in dollars compared to last year, November, and up 31.19%.
Wow.
In the top 100 rankings, it's basically almost entirely Marvel and DC, with the exception of number 68 being Walking Dead, number 91 by Image, and 97 being Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 4 from IDW. No appearance by Dark Horse, so there must not have been a Buffy the Vampire Slayer that came out in November.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting because as the top 100 is always going to be a place where we're going to find out how these other companies are doing. When something pops up, and Walking Dead's always going to do well, but other books from Image or Top Cow or any of those people, when one of those breaks in the top 100, that's news. So it's going to be real interesting to see. Now, how did the trade paperbacks do comparatively?
Graphic novels were actually up from the previous month, I assume because probably people were holiday shopping. They were up a whopping 29.67% in dollars and 30% in unit shares. And compared to last year, they were also up 12.43% in dollars and actually less than like a percentage down in unit shares from last year. So people, I guess, buying pricier trades or graphic novel collections. And number 1 was Batman Noel.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Not got that yet.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that the last couple of months, trades had taken a big hit. So apparently they're coming back up again. So that's a good thing for stores. They sell a lot of trades.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and move on into other news then? We'll start with Ian. Ian, what news do you have for us?
These are two things that you've posted, Wayne, so I'm stealing your news.
Okay.
Start off with a sad story, really. You know, comics legend Jerry Robinson passed this past week at the age of 89. So he had a pretty good innings. Famous, of course, for actually having drawn Batman and Superman for Detective Comics, as well as the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And Robin. He also developed Robin.
And Robin. There's a picture of him that you posted with a few of his covers. Really liking the one of Superman holding the eagle.
DC actually made a statue of that.
Yeah, and I can see why. It looks really cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah, I'm sorry to have him go because he was one of the people that was standing up for creators' rights. And he actually became something of a comics historian over the years because basically he'd been around for so long he could remember how things had gone. He was teaming up with Neil Adams to make sure that Siegel and Schuster got their proper credit for Superman. So, and interestingly enough, they mentioned in the original article that I was looking at about Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight, the Joker was based a lot on his concepts from that. So what Heath Ledger did was had a lot to do with what Jerry Robinson created, which I found really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a sad loss to the industry when someone with that much influence just passes, you know?
Yeah, really, condolences to the family and friends of Jerry Robinson.
Absolutely.
The other bit of news is Ghost Project's Joe Harris is joining DC's Fury of Firestorm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As of issue 7, he's going to co-write the Fury of Firestorm, the New King of Men.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be assisting Ethan Van Sciver,
mm-hmm.
a great name, that, on the New 52 title. Gail Simone, who co-plotted the first 6 issues, will focus her attention on DC's ongoing Batgirl title, according mm-hmm. to DC Comics blog The Source.
Mm-hmm. Now, Joe Harris has written some stuff for DC in the past. He wrote some Batman projects and stuff like that. But Ghost Project is going to become a series, I believe, on sci-fi. And they also did a book called Spontaneous that I really loved. And I, of course, interviewed him on this podcast previously. So he's quite a funny guy. He looks at things with a very different eye, which, of course, just makes him a good writer. And he's got a lot of interesting things to say. I'm going to be really fascinated to see what he does with Firestorm.
It'd be interesting to watch him get him on the main SFP Now show at some point to ask him, you know, once we start seeing Ghost Project on the Sci-Fi Channel, mm-hmm. so we can get his view on how it's being adapted.
The series was a fun series. It had to do, and I could say it's fun, it was rather scary. It was about something taking place in Russia where there was ghosts and nuclear problems and all kinds of things going on that this American got stuck in the middle of. So it was a really interesting story, and I'm not surprised that Sci-Fi is interested in adapting it. It doesn't have superheroes or anything like that. It's just mainly agents getting involved with something out of their canon. There are ghosts involved too, which is why it's called Ghost Project, but it's a very interesting book. Every issue, very surprised by it. What I loved when they came out with the hardcover was that it had glow-in-the-dark stuff. So now in my bedroom, every once in a while I wake up and I see the glow-in-the-dark going off and I'm going, oh no, what's that? But they haven't put the Spontaneous hardcover out yet. I joked with him when I had him on here about, you know, is it going to burst into flame when you touch it or something, so you have to keep buying more hardcovers, you know, to raise the amount he makes. But he wasn't sure what they're going to do. If I know them, they'll make it like a red glowing kind of a thing, but we'll see. But anyway, it's an interesting thing. Mr. Harris is not really involved in DC that much, so this is going to be quite a change for him. And, you know, not to say he's done bad work before, but him joining DC and being part of the New 52 is a really good thing for him. I think it's going to make him popular. It's going to be very fascinating to see what happens with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Gianluca, how about you? What news would you like to bring up?
Let me start off with some gossip news, basically. Ooh. Social media can be your friend in terms of promoting books, but it can also be your foe in terms of putting your foot in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen in the past people like Ashton Kutcher and recently Alec Baldwin do the latter in terms of using Twitter and Facebook, you know, to kind of say things that are inappropriate and it coming back to bite them. Well, we can add Wayne's favorite writer, J. Michael Straczynski, to the list.
Oh boy, I can't wait to hear this.
Because earlier December 10th, J. Michael Straczynski posted a graph of the Amazing Spider-Man sales since leaving the comic and posting with that, in quotes, just saying. Steve Wacker, who is the current editor on Amazing Spider-Man, responded, called Straczynski classless, you know, mentioned how the graph is not correct, you know, in terms of the sales and stuff like that. J. Michael responds back basically on the defensive side, and Mark Waid chimes in basically and calls J. Michael a dick for doing that. Yeah,
I always like Mark Waid.
Oh, he had a great quote basically. Yeah, I'm going to do this long, boring walk across America and never finish it.
I never understood that whole Grounded storyline. It never made sense to me. But anyway.
Yeah. I think he was auditioning for Fozzie Bear in the Muppets. Oh, waka, waka, waka.
Yeah, walkabouts. Yeah. All right. Any more on that story?
Nothing more in that particular story. But in terms of other announcements blowing up in people's faces, Dark Horse released an announcement earlier this week saying they were going to release their comics both in print and digital simultaneously. What they didn't say was how much they were going to charge their digital comics. Mm. And unfortunately, you know, with digital comics, retailers are very wary about it. It's a minefield when you do these kinds of things. So you had some very vocal retailers who were wanting to kind of avoid stocking up on Dark Horse and only deal with special orders based on this kind of news. Dark Horse had to quickly put out a revision saying that they were going to charge the digital books the same price, but then a month later we're going to lower it down to their $1.99 and 99 cent range. So, you know, it's a very hot topic, you know, digital comics. A lot of retailers are very wary about it. So pretty interesting on that front.
Do you think that that's a wise move as far as digital goes, to wait a month before you lower the price?
You know, people are kind of having to tiptoe around it. You can't avoid digital. It's here to stay. It's probably the future of comics. From a retailer standpoint, yes, I can understand why, because they feel that people would rather pay the cheaper price up front for their comics as opposed to having the print version. So I do see why they would want to do that. Eventually, it's going to become a non-issue at some point in time.
See, I think as a person who buys comics, I would much prefer to be able to download a digital thing at a lower price. Because I'm just the kind of person that doesn't necessarily want to hold on to my digital copies. I want my paper copies. So if there's something I want to read that I don't necessarily want to collect, I would much rather be able to get something and then dive back into the paper copies if I really like what I get.
I think this is kind of bowing
the knee to the retailers. And I don't know in long term if this is going to be a wise move on Dark Horse's part, but we'll see.
Yeah. We talked last week about Free Comic Book Day's gold sponsor titles. Mm-hmm. You mentioned specifically the Archaea is doing an oversized hardcover book.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, Diamond announced the Free Comic Book Day silver sponsor titles. Mm. And there are quite a lot. I don't want to go over them all. Mm. One thing I did notice different than in previous years is that you have publishers with multiple silver titles. Mm. Used to be that the most you could do was one silver title and one gold title, if you're lucky to get the gold sponsor title. But in a lot of these, you see people with two of them. But stuff that stood out for me overall, let me just go down the list real quick. Mm-hmm. Blue Water has the Burt Ward Boy Wonder number one.
Uh-oh.
Free Comic Book Day.
Is that that's following in Adam West's footsteps?
Absolutely. So, yeah, last year they did The Misadventures of Adam West. Mm-hmm. They've made that an ongoing series. They announced earlier this year they were doing one for Julie Newmar. And so Burt Ward gets his own as well.
We're going to have a crossover eventually. I'm just convinced of it. All three of them will be get together into one book.
Yeah. The one that most excites me is this one from Boom Studios. Mm-hmm. They're doing Dune Origins.
Mm-hmm.
So Brian Herbert's involved with that. He's the son of
Frank Herbert.
But basically, yeah, it's an origin story. That looks really cool. I believe Rao Lira is doing the artwork for that. You may not know the name, but he was involved with one of Boom's earliest books, Jeremiah Harm.
Oh.
So he's involved with this one, and it looks really interesting.
Good.
A lot of new publishers here also doing Free Comic Book Day books. Caption Box is doing a Middle East comics anthology featuring works of nearly a dozen different Middle Eastern artists. Mm-hmm. Sounds interesting. The Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is doing the Censored Howard Cruz comic. And it's done in association with Boomtown, which is Boom Studios' imprint for one of the more odd books that they do. So pretty interesting stuff there. Drawn and Quarterly has two silver sponsor books. So, I mean, this is, like I said, this is one of the first publishers that do that. Mm-hmm. One of them is Marble Season Preview, and the other one is Moomin Color Special. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Fantagraphic Books is doing Carl Banks's Walt Disney's Donald Duck Family Comics. Mm-hmm. So they have the rights to doing like the old reprint Disney stuff. Fantagraphics also has Crockett Johnson's Barnaby Sampler. So interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Herm's Press, however you pronounce it, is doing a My Favorite Martian Special Edition Free Comic Book Day book.
Mm-hmm.
Liquid Comics, which used to be what was that?
I don't know that.
Virgin. Virgin Comics.
Oh, really?
So this is kind of like the offshoot of that, but they are doing Dinosaur versus Aliens. So it's a sequel to Cowboy versus Alien.
Yeah.
Kidding. It's not, but it has Grant Morrison and Barry Sonnenfeld involved with it. So
Virgin Comics used to do Dan Dare.
Yes.
I think
you're right.
Yeah. Liquid Comics also has another silver sponsor free comic book day book called Graphic Elvis Preview. You got Stan Lee and various other people involved. John Cassidy is one of the artists. And it's going to be a collection of different stories, basically kind of an anthology book. So, old special in there. Old Spider-Man. Oni Press, who did Spontaneous last year as a free comic book day book. This time they have Bad Medicine number 1, which is described as pulled out of the exile from a dark corner of the world. Renowned surgeon turned fringe medicine eccentric Dr. Randall Horn must return to New York City to investigate a tragic research lab accident that's left one man dead and inexplicably headless. With the help of a distrusting NYPD detective, Horn must diagnose whether the strange case was truly a random act of misfortune or the first calculated move by an invisible psychotic murderer.
Does it say who's doing that?
Yes. Writer is Nunzio De Filippis and Christina Weir, and then the artist is Christopher Mitten.
Okay.
Not familiar offhand.
Yeah, Joe Harris has done several of the new free comic book date stuff. I think they did Ghost Project too, if I'm not mistaken. But I think that helped Spontaneous is one that came out on free comic book day. It was a very interesting change of appearance, very graphic, very red, fiery kind of look to the book. And I think the exposure helped get that together and make that a more successful book. So that's why I was asking about that. I wonder who was doing it.
Just a few more. Rebellion, who do 2000 AD. They're doing a 2000 AD Judge Dredd special. I remember last year their thing was oversized. So.
Yeah, that was a great one. That had a lot of comedy and a lot of humor in that one. I'm looking forward to that already.
Yeah. Red 5 Comics is doing another Atomic Robo. This is Atomic Robo and Friends.
Yes.
2012.
I love Atomic Robo.
Third World Productions, I'm not familiar with that publisher. They have a book called Finding Gossamer and the Stuff of Legends number 4. Ah, they're the Stuff of Legends guys, so interesting there. Top Shelf Comics has a Top Shelf Kids Club in 2012. 12 Gauge is stepping in with a free comic book day with Anti number 1 preview, which looks interesting. Valiant returns with a Valiant Comics 2012 preview. They have to be determined in terms of who the writers and artists are. But Jelena Kevic-Djurjevic, who's Marko Djurjevic's wife, does the cover for this book. And it's going to have, I guess, previews of Exo, Man of War, Bloodshot, Harbinger, and some of the best-selling heroes of all time coming back.
Interesting.
Another interesting is Viz Media is doing a Voltron Force, Shelter of the Storm. It's the Voltron property, but it's a more anime type thing than the one that Dynamite is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting stuff on that. Yen Press has a book called The Infernal Device, Clockwork Angel. Xenoscope has a couple of titles. I believe they did like Shark Attack or something like that last year. Mm-hmm. This is The World's Most Dangerous Animals. And then they have something called Jurassic Strike Force 5. Kept in ice in millions of years, the Earth's first team of heroes is back to protect the planet from the threat of the evil alien overlord Zalix and his band of mutated dinosaur soldiers. There you go. Some interesting stuff coming out for Free Comic Book Day.
Should we move on to previews?
Sure.
Okay. Ian, why don't you go ahead and start?
Well, you know, this is something that, you know, I won't necessarily get, but if I had $40, I'd get it. Coming out this week is Flash Gordon Volume 5 is of the classic strip, of classic Flash Gordon strips. It's a hardback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's called
Fantagraphics or something.
Yeah, Dark Horse.
Dark Horse.
Coming out through Dark Horse. It's basically a hardback of the, it's Volume 5 of a series of hardbacks that they've been releasing of the classic Flash Gordon strips from way back.
Mm-hmm.
So they're up to Volume 5, so I should imagine they're sort of like starting to get off of Alex Raymond now. Interesting one coming out through IDW, Godzilla Legends, Issue 2 of 5 is coming out. I didn't actually know about that one. Sean Comer's Greatest Cases, Hardcover, Volume 1 is coming out. Rocketeer Adventures, Hardcover, Volume 1.
Yes.
It's due out, and that's $24.99. That'd be through IDW, of course. Mm-hmm. And Star Trek Legion of Superheroes 3 of 6 comes out.
Yeah. Yes, it's a crossover, isn't it?
Yeah.
Legions and Star Trek.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Wayne's been reading that one.
Yep, it's actually pretty good.
Moving on to the ones that I'll actually be getting, Demon Knights issue 4 comes out this week, along with Frankenstein Agent of Shade and Suicide Squad.
Nice.
Very good. You know, by the way, Frankenstein Agent of Shade showed up in one of the other New 52 books last week. I can't remember what it is. We'll move on from that.
And for you, Wayne, with Walking Dead, Walking Dead trade paperback, volume 15 comes out this week. And Walking Dead Weekly, issue 50 is out this week.
Very good.
Okay, so I'll pass on to you guys before I just start reading all the previews down here.
Okay, Jean-Luc, how about you? What are you looking forward to?
All right. From DC, this is for December 14th. I'm looking forward to Batwoman number 4.
Of course.
Looking good. I'm going to save the other Bat title for you to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Also from DC is the debut of, it's a miniseries, The Ray number 1.
Yeah.
From Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. New kind of superhero title. So I'll definitely check that out. Mm-hmm. Previously mentioned, IDW has the Rocketeer Adventures hardcover coming out. Mm-hmm. This collects the 4-issue miniseries that was an anthology featuring like a who's who of great writers and artists taking Dave Stevens' work and paying homage to it. So really good book, really good series. I'm looking forward to picking up this hardcover trade of it.
You and me both.
Yeah.
Also, there's a trade paperback coming out this week if you're into your song like war books. Garth Ennis's Complete Battlefields comes out this week.
Oh, yeah. It's not your typical kind of war stories either. You know, a lot of drama.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Image Comics has Samurai's Blood number 6. This is the final issue. It's the final issue of the miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely check it out. Great artwork by Nam Kim. Very intelligent story by Owen Wiseman. I hardly recommend it. Mm-hmm. Archaea has A Tale of Sand hardcover coming
yes.
out.
Yes, yes.
This is Jim Henson's unfinished. This was supposed to have been made into a movie. Never happened, unfortunately. But it is being presented as a graphic novel. Arkay puts out some really good books. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to this title particularly also.
Me too.
And Boom Studios has Irredeemable Artist Edition. And what it is, it's the first issue of Irredeemable. It's $3.99, but it's all in black and white. So if you love the artwork, if you're an artist lover, definitely check it out. Mm-hmm. I will, out of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for me.
Okay, well, one I'm sure you just overlooked was Blue Estate comes out, number 8.
Ah, yes.
Which is one of those great little crime noir books that's so much fun to read. I just, you turned me on to that, and I love the book. So
it's just, oh, good. I'm glad. The covers are my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. And, of course, Batgirl number 4 for me. I just think that Ms. Simone does wonderful stuff on that. It's such a good book. Batman and Robin number 4. Then we've got Deathstroke number 4, which I'm actually liking. Kyle Higgins is doing a pretty good job on that. Green Lantern number 4. Mr. Johns returns with great stuff. Grifter, Legion Lost, which is changing writers before long. Mr. Terrific, Resurrection Man, which I've liked. Shade, another miniseries, number 3. Superboy, which I think that's a pretty good book. I really like that. I kind of like that book, so I think that's a good thing. As far as other books go, Severed, number 5 of 7, written by Scott Snyder. Great, great book. Oh, I highly recommend that book. And if you haven't ever read the Walking Dead comic, boy, that's such a good thing. You'll understand why the show is so good if you read the comic. From Marvel, Avengers Academy, number 23, which is actually a low-selling book, but that's probably my favorite of the mainstream books that they do. Iron Man 2.0, number 11, which is canceled before long, written by Nick Spencer. It's coming out. John Carter of Mars, The World of Mars, number 3 of 5. Those are all from Marvel. Oh my God, this is a big Marvel week for me. I'm buying 3 like whole books. Man.
How are the Marvel version of the John Carter stories as opposed to Dynamite?
I guess I'm partial. I still like the Dynamite one by Mr. Arvid Nelson. I just think his are so much more adult in nature, and I feel like he's doing a much better job of profound storytelling. It's not that the other one's bad, but it just doesn't have the same adult, I mean that in a good way, not in an X-rated way, but it just has a strong feel to it. It feels like it's more powerful storytelling to me than Marvel, but Marvel's not one to let something that they can jump on and make money on, you know, to let that go by. So anyway, other books real quick. Atomic Robo, Ghost of Station X, number 4 of 6. Love that book. Love that book. If you got Atomic Robo, such good stuff. Cyclops, number 7, which is a translation of a European comic through Archaea, which another one of those books I really love so much. Insurrection,
Action is finally going to have another trade paperback. It's written by Mark Guggenheim. And it's a very interesting book. President Clinton is still alive, and he's one of the leaders of the insurgency, which is always makes that an interesting fantasy for me.
You mean Bill Clinton's still president?
Yes.
He's still alive now.
he's still president. Well, it's
Monica didn't quite finish him off.
Yeah, well, Warehouse 13 number 3 is out based on this TV show, and the aforementioned Arvid Nelson Warlord of Mars number 13 is out. And those are the ones I'm looking forward to as well.
I'm looking at some merchandise here.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with an interest to when I do eventually open my store.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, there's a lot of Batman Arkham City stuff coming out this week.
Yep.
Yes.
There's the Arkham City Batman coming out. I think these are action figures.
These are T-shirts.
Oh, they're T-shirts, sorry.
Yeah, there's a bunch of T-shirts on there. Joker, and there's the staff, and all that stuff. So there's a lot of Arkham City stuff coming out. Video game's doing real well, except for the fact that when they put the PC version out, the system doesn't work quite right. So I haven't yet bought it, but I will get it once they get that straightened out. All right, thanks, guys. We'll get together next week for the last one of 2011. And that's a wrap for the 38th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to tune in next week, which will be the final one for 2011. I have a very special guest in Josh Keaton, who provides the voice of Hal Jordan in the Green Lantern, the animated series cartoon on Cartoon Network. He's got a lot of interesting things to say, so I know you'll enjoy that. But until then, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.